My brother keeps a human head in his closet. I hope I don't end up that way.
This thing, it's gonna follow you. Somebody gave it to me. And I passed it to you. It could look like someone you know, or it could be a stranger in a crowd. It could look like anyone.
Help! Santa Claus only brings presents to them that's been good all year. To the ones that ain't done nothing naughty. All the other ones. All the naughty ones. He punishes. You see Santa Claus tonight, you better run, boy. You better run for your life.
Bring me one of those chickens.
You got money to pay for it?
You paid for it.
No, but we're the king's men. So, you got money?
Not a penny. I'll still take that chicken.
You don't seem to understand the situation.
I understand that if any more words come pouring out your mouth, I'm going to have to eat every chicken in this room.
You lived your life for the king. You're gonna die for some chickens.
Someone is.
The symbol is associated with a pagan deity named Bagul. He consumes the souls of human children. Early Christians believed that Bagul actually lived in the images themselves and that they were gateways into his realm.
I am seriously positive these were not here. How would we have, just made a campsite in between three piles of rocks just by coincidence?
You don't think this is strange?
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how are you, sir?
I'd rather be napping with my cat.
Oh, are you tired? Is it work busy?
Cat cuddling is awesome.
Gotcha. Okay. And in the state of New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm cuddling with Eric's cat right now.
Hey, Pickle, goddammit, you slut.
And state of Massachusetts.
Hey, everyone, this is Abe here.
Abe, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Excellent. And a Connecticut American.
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how are you?
I'm very excited because I just discovered beer battered onion ring Ruffles potato chips, and I think my world has been made.
Too. I saw that post too, yes.
Oh my God, they're so good.
Abe, welcome back. You've been
He's a working man.
Yeah, it's been fucking weird. My schedule is never consistent, so it's not like a 9 to 5 job. So, you know, I had to finish the job before I can go.
Gotcha. Now, a couple things. We're recording this on November 7th, 2019. For those who follow our recording dates. Also, who we are Dark Discussions Podcast for new folks. Basically, we try to talk about horror films, sci-fi, fantasy thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, midnight movies, cult films, and the like. Basically, try to critique as well as review and try to speak intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. Eric, we have a website.
Yes, we do. Oh, would you like me to talk about it?
Yep.
You can find our website at www.darkdiscussions.com. You can find any number of things on this website. On the right-hand side of the page, you can find links to Friends of the Podcast. Up at the top, you can find links to different sections of the website, including the section with articles that have been written by myself as well as others. There's an audio section where you can find every single episode of the podcast, as well as all of the spinoff podcasts available for free. So you can check that out, find something you're interested in. And on the front center, the front page is a link to our Patreon account. Patreon lets you financially support your online artists. If you care to help us offset the cost of producing the podcast, you can go there. Or you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. For every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly cover on the show. We take all submissions and draw them randomly on a quarterly basis. For more details, you can follow the link on the front page or go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. And we are doing a Patreon pick tonight.
That's right. Before we get into that, a couple other things. We have an email, darkdiscussions@aol.com. Basically, you can send your feedback or you could send suggestions. You can make a MP3 file, attach it as an audio, or you can give us reviews of films you've seen or whether they're classic horror films or hidden gems that you think people should know about, and we will play all those things and read all those things on the episodes if we do get emails from you folks. I know Gage Fultz said he's going to be sending us an email soon enough related to our topic tonight. But I think that we can, well, we'll discuss that in a second, which is basically a Patreon pick is tonight, and Gage actually was the winner. His film was picked. So I guess we can probably get into the podcast tonight, unless anybody has any further things they wanted to bring up before we do get into that. Anything? Anyone?
Nope.
All right. So, Eric, what are we going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, we're going to discuss a 2018 film available on Netflix, Calibre, or maybe Caliber. I'm not sure.
Don't promise me like half to yourself.
Yeah. I'm going hunting.
So how you been? All this baby shit, it must be mad.
I know, I'm sorry. I know you always wanted to be the one who got pregnant.
Marcus, Trenton and Von Carter, 3 nights.
That's right, yes.
You guys picked the perfect weekend to feature.
Get booty as hell.
Well, you boys have a good day's hunting out there, eh?
We will.
Reckon you can take down a deer?
Probably not, no.
Not everyone can do it.
Go to the police. It'll be considered murder.
We go to that town, we come back here tonight.
You have no choice.
Successful day stalking?
We're putting together a search party.
What were you doing last night?
What real evidence have we got? Nothing.
We were wrong, and we're gonna pay for it.
The guy!
Everything I did here, I did to protect us.
I'm so sorry.
That's not gonna be enough. That's not gonna be nearly enough.
That's right, 2018 film. It's a Scottish film, British film, whatever. Caliber. Is basically how it's pronounced. A lot of films like theater and things of that nature are spelled R-E instead of E-R.
Because the British are fucking weird.
The British English. The film is directed by someone named Matt Palmer. Stars Jack Loudon, Martin McCann, and Tony Curran. Screenplay is also by Matt Palmer. And the film is basically been picked up by Netflix as a quote-unquote Netflix original. It basically was playing at the Edinburgh International Film Festival, and they went in there and they bought the film. And then they plop Netflix original on it and play it. The film's actually getting pretty good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes at 93% out of 15 reviews, so not many reviewers, but that's usually the case for a lot of VOD type films. That may be somewhat of importance to folks who follow critics. I don't know which critics they are, so I can't vouch for it. But we saw the film, and we can give our opinions of it. So let's go around and discuss how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So let's start with you, Mike.
I heard about it a couple of weeks ago when this was picked as our Patreon pick for tonight, and that was how I heard about it. I just watched it last night. I liked it a lot. It's a nice little, I guess, thriller. A little Scottish, but it's really hard to talk about too much, but I think it was an interesting premise, kind of, I guess, a Scottish take on the hillbilly horror, except they're not hillbillies. They're Scottish.
They're true rednecks.
They're the original rednecks, drunken Scotsmen. I'm trying to think.
It's difficult to talk about without spoiling anything.
Yeah, it's a small film. There's really only a cast of about five relevant characters for most of the film's running time, or six. It's definitely a strong recommend. I liked it a great deal. Since it's on Netflix and you're probably already subscribing to Netflix because you live in the Western Hemisphere, I would highly recommend you watch it, since it's not going to cost you anything but about an hour and 45 minutes of time, I think. So it's a solid film. This is hard to believe. This is the best I can come up with. I apologize, Gage. I'm just totally letting you down.
All right. Very well. Chrissy.
I think this is a very solid dark drama. I would agree with Mike. I think the acting is good. I love the atmosphere. I think it's very tightly written. It's not very multi-leveled. It's pretty straightforward. It holds together well. I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. And especially in this age where you want to watch something on Netflix and you're just not sure if it's going to be decent, this is one of those ones that I would say is definitely worth your time.
All right, very well. Abe?
I heard about this when Phil informed me this would be our topic, since I couldn't make it for last week. I finished it today. It's a pretty good film overall. It's well shot. The performances of the cast are solid. It's very straightforward, as Chrissy said, but that doesn't mean it's any less interesting. It's a very bleak film. It's not exactly a film that, you know, you kind of sit down just to pop in for some exactly excitement, but it's a well-crafted piece of film. I would say at certain points very emotionally taxing, but that's going to be depending on the viewer, of course. It's definitely a recommend if you have Netflix, if you're looking for a thriller or some drama. I think some reviewers call it horror, but that doesn't sound accurate at all. There's some dark moments, but it's definitely more on the drama side. It's kind of difficult to talk about dissecting it completely, since we had to move into spoilers right away. So I'll hold off on any other things until after everybody gives their thoughts.
All right, very well. For me, I heard about it because it was picked on the Patreon. Prior to that, I was unfamiliar with the film. I would agree with Abe that it's an emotionally taxing film, a very stressful film, at least for me to watch, because it was very intense. So obviously that is fairly a good sign, because, again, that's why it's called a thriller. There were some moments that I felt were, I guess, loose ends in a sense. I'll talk about them here or there. And I felt the ending was completely unreal. and probably the weakest part, the last like 5 minutes and such. The film does crib a lot from other films we've seen and that we actually reviewed on this podcast before, such as Cheap Thrills and another film recently, Would You Rather, a couple of others like that. But all in all, even after I was very let down at the end and so forth, now a few days later, I still have to give it a thumbs up. It's a pretty solid film, and that alone is important because the filmmaker definitely did a great job. Even with some weaknesses in the script, they casted the film really well. And they kept it moving, kept it exciting, and kept it entertaining as well. Yeah, that's my opinion. Eric?
I don't disagree with much of what anybody has said already. This is a solid film, and I would recommend it as a Netflix watch. However, I had a very strange experience with this film. I'm wondering if maybe I watched this when it first came out and then forgot that I watched it, because I don't have it logged in Letterboxd, and I've become pretty religious about doing that over the last couple years. But as I was watching this movie, like Phil was describing what a stressful experience it was for him. It was not that for me. I felt it was incredibly predictable. And where Phil was watching this movie being all stressed out over the tension, I was like, okay, that was A, now we're going to B, and now we're going to C, and now we're going to D, and now the movie's over. So I don't think it affected me nearly as much as it did Phil, but I'm going to put that on me rather than on the movie, and I would recommend it.
I'll agree with you, Eric, that it's predictable. I think a lot of tension there is a moment in the film that's not predictable.
Okay.
And that's what sets the ball rolling for me.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah.
Cuz that one, I was watching this with my wife and we we both kind of, you know, sat up when the moment comes.
There was one Chekhov's gun that should have made us know something like that was going to happen, but we'll discuss that as we go. Continue, Mike.
But I think that knowing where it's going predictably, I think that very much is part of the tension, because you know what's going to happen. And the question is, as maybe more, how is it going to happen and when is it going to happen? At least for me. And Phil, I don't see the connection at all between the two movies that you mentioned.
I was having trouble with that too, but we can talk about it. But yeah, we've got to throw a spoiler flag up here as soon as possible.
Yeah.
I will say this. This is a good film if you're, you know, the person who listens to these podcasts and you're just talking to about some either stuff that's very dark or very gory. This is a film you could probably point your friends to and say, you know, have you seen anything? And you could probably recommend this film to them, because while it's a dark film,
a lot of it's implied.
It's almost all implied. There's very little gore in it. It's not overly violent. It's not disgusting. You know, it's not perverted in any particular way. You know, no one knows, no mouths sewn to asses or anything like that. It's not exploitative in any way.
When the scene happened, Mike, I thought you may have cheered because of what happened.
Well, I wasn't sure. I wanted to cheer, but I was so confused at what happened. I wasn't even sure if what happened.
Right.
If that makes any sense. So I didn't know if I should be cheering.
Right. No, that's
if I was just being, I was afraid I was being lied to.
Right. Well, there's a scene later in the film that makes me at one moment say, oh my God, they're going to have a huge twist, which is we were lied and it was something else that happened. But they didn't go there. And I'll talk about that when we do as well. And I'll explain why I felt that it cribbed a little bit from those other two films, Cheap Thrills and Would You Rather, at least the endings anyway. All right. So I guess, Eric, do we have a wiki for this?
Yes. A shocking deed.
Hey, wait. No.
Sorry. I forgot. Wiki. All right. Better?
Yes.
Well done. All right.
A shocking deed turned their weekend trip into a nightmare. Now their only hope is to swallow their paranoia and act normal.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God. Well,
there is. I think we can say this. The tremendous sexual tension between the two guys the whole weekend, right? I'm not the only one who saw that.
I don't know about that. But you never know.
Once they run into the gang of gung-toting leprechauns. You got a pretty mouth,
it's
me laddie.
Scotland, not Ireland, you racist fuck.
That's not race. That's ethnicity, Mike.
A little different.
All right. So, they're all Celtic people, right? I mean, the Scottish and the Irish.
I don't care.
Well, Mike was the one that brought it up, I guess. All right. So I guess we can. Before we do that, any thoughts that are non-spoilery that people want to bring up? I felt it's an interesting choice. It's a type of film that had I seen on my own without knowing that it was a Patreon, I could have possibly suggested it as an episode anyway. But this is a interesting episode.
You wouldn't have,
sure.
Because of a thing that happens, you would not have recommended it.
Oh, no, I actually had no issue with that. Well, I kind
of... Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh, you know why? Because it was a real
bad
dog.
It was a bad dog.
It was a real dog.
No, it's only bad dogs.
There's a real dog. It was a good dog.
There are no bad dogs. There's only bad owners.
So
and little dogs. Bad little
dogs.
Yeah, this is just a pain in the ass. It's like, all right, whatever. We can, but either way, yeah, it was an interesting film choice because, you know, a lot of the times we have more semi-well-known films that are picked in the Patreon picks. And this one came out of nowhere, similar to, I guess, Dead Man. And even Dead Man at least had a huge cast. This had nobody. So it was actually kind of interesting.
Dead Man, because of Johnny Depp, I had heard of Dead Man. And Jim Jarmusch, you know, who had just done...
He's pretty big.
Yeah, he's pretty big. He just did the Dead Don't Die.
The vampire film?
No.
Oh, the one after
zombies.
That? Yeah, what
the zombie film.
The Dead Don't Swallow?
But anyway, continue.
So, this is I don't know anybody in this that's... Well, actually, there's, I think, one actor... who plays Lucas, I think. I know him. I recognize him probably from Game of Thrones because of, you know, where they're filming.
He also, you mean Logan, the guy that played Logan?
Yeah.
I think he was also in Blade, too.
Yeah, he's Blade, too. He was also the Visible Man in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. He was in Defiance. He played the vampire Marcus in the second Underworld film.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and he's also in some movie called Beryl from Grendel as well. And oh yes, and he was in the 13th Warrior.
Okay, and I've seen that one. You said he was the Invisible Man?
Yeah.
In League of Extraordinary. It's funny because I saw League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. I don't remember seeing him in that.
Hi.
But
Jing.
No joke too cheap.
but either way, yeah, he's fairly popular character actor, especially in European British films anyway. So it wouldn't surprise me that people kind of knew who he was or at least seen his face. You know, he's like one of those guys, oh, I know that guy, but I don't know his name. Anything else, Mike, you were going to say? Sorry, before.
No, that was it. But again, it's a good film, good recommend, and a good one to recommend to others without them looking at you.
Oh,
like
he was even in the Midnight Meat Train.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, actually, I think I remember.
Speaking of swallowing.
All right. So I guess we can throw up the spoiler alert and then we can pretty much talk about everything and anything. As Mike has mentioned, it's on Netflix and available, obviously, at any time by pressing the the play button. So until and unless you don't want to spoil, go see it first. But otherwise, we're going to not only review, but we're going to critique as well and discuss scenes and actions and how people act and whatnot. So
and dogs.
All right. So we'll throw up the spoiler, and I guess we can discuss and talk about everything and anything. So it's basically two guys on a hunting trip, and that's the reason why I don't go into the woods during hunting season. Today,
probably a good plan. Yeah.
Yes, what I do during this winter and fall is I walk parking lots, and so today I did 1 mile around the Michael's parking lot in my hometown. Because twice around, because you're not going to get shot there.
Well, that's an assumption.
Well, you know, it's, you know, well, that's a fair point, Eric.
But Eric, if you do get shot there, you can sue Michaels.
There you go. Yeah.
So, but the thing that's interesting is I got a thing from my local town recreation department, you know, adult recreation department, whatever. And they sent a thing for a walk this Saturday at 6 o'clock. Through, you know, for and to do see some stuff out there and whatever, and then it says, but make sure if you do join us to wear all orange because we are sharing the forest with our hunters. And then that's why I said, that's why I am not going. So yes, so this is a hunting trip, and that's pretty much it.
Two guys go hunting, and there's a horrible accident, where the one guy is taking a shot at a deer, but the deer moves, and behind the deer is a child in the woods who he kills. And then the child's father shows up, and there's some tension, and his buddy, what happens, the guy that shot the kid is, of course, very distraught, and so he puts his gun down. The kid's dad shows up and picks up that guy's gun and points it at him. And the guy's trying to explain that it was an accident, but of course this father is very distraught over what just happened. And from further away, his hunting partner is trying to see what's going on and sees the guy pointing the gun at his friend. And decides better safe than sorry and shoots the guy so that he doesn't shoot his friend. And so they end up with a dead man and his dead son in the woods. And they got to figure out what to do.
Right, right. I mean, there's a whole half hour before that where these two guys, one guy is engaged to a woman who is pregnant. So he's going to have a kid. Plus, he's planning to get married. The other one, we don't know much about his personal life or history because it's, even though he's a co-star of the film is mostly in the perspective of the father to be. But they head to this remote village up in Scotland, way up in Scotland, and a lot of it's like a dying village and stuff. They don't explain why, because you figure if it's a farming community, but I guess there's other things. It was like a factory or something without a business, whatever. But either way, as Mike kind of said, it's definitely the crackers of I guess the Scotland, because
well, it's kind of like the opening of American Werewolf in London where they go to the slaughtered lamb, but if they just ran afoul the people in the tavern rather than, you know, getting bitten by a werewolf.
Yeah, and that's what kind of reminded me, because it's like the what was it called, the slaughtered lamb in the stag's head, and I was thinking. Because and when you walk in, they walk into it, it looks very similar into the out the layout.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you guys brought that up because I was trying to figure out where I've seen this before. But I mean, this is we saw this in Straw Dogs too. I mean, these little you know, you see it in every Hammer film for crying out loud, even though it's, you know, takes place 100 years earlier. But these little inns in the middle of nowhere, and all the people are local. You know, we've seen it in Wolf's Creek, for that matter. And they don't necessarily like outsiders, or they look at outsiders as something curious, like a little boy finding a mouse in a shed or something. It's so it's very, I guess, uncomfortable. And we've seen it many times, so it's nothing original either.
Right.
So I
found that to be the least intriguing aspect of this movie, was the whole thing with the, like, the guys getting mad about the women, and I'm just like, really? All right.
Oh, that was kind of least, I honestly felt like padding in certain points there, because considering that wasn't really necessary.
Well, that's kind of part of what brings things to a head later too, but we've seen this many times.
Well, I think if the stuff with the girls hadn't happened, it would have come to a head anyway.
Right. But we've seen where people go into a bar and some girl tries to make some semi boyfriend jealous, and then they flirt with them and play pool with them and do this and do that, and people get pissed and whatever.
I'm not saying it's not a thing that happened. I'm just saying to me, it was the least intriguing part of the movie.
Well, I'm actually kind of agreeing with you, Eric. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because it's just the same old, it felt. Because at that point in the movie, I was like, oh, this is going to be just another one of those movies. outsiders get harassed by local rednecks. And that kind of will happen, but not for the reasons we think. But anyway, what do people have to say? Anything? I mean,
well, I think because of the setting, it makes sense. In order for this to happen, you couldn't reverse this, right? You couldn't have it be, you know, some guy from out in the boonies somewhere running into problem in, I don't know, Edinburgh or something. The setup for this to happen has to happen in that environment. You need to have that fish out of water setting. I think though the nature of the stuff that happens, the stuff with the girlfriend, was just a way to amp up the tension a little bit, to put a little bit of extra sand in the Vaseline to start the film, but it really has no major bearing as to what comes later. It's also a bit of a red herring for some of the events that happen later on, to mislead you into thinking they're getting in trouble for one thing when in fact they're getting in trouble for another. I think the biggest problem we have is that one of our two protagonists is a major douche nozzle.
It depends on your opinion. I don't think I agree with that.
Yeah, you wouldn't, but he's a major douche nozzle.
I don't know.
He's a major douche nozzle.
I gotta go with Mike on this one.
Other one's the major douche nozzle. Yeah, and I'll explain why, but continue, Mike.
No, you're wrong. And who gets what's coming to him, kind of, because he's the one that fucks everything up. Takes a terrible, terrible, terrible tragedy.
And makes it worse.
And makes it so much worse. Fixing it.
Well, no matter what, they're all done. The moment it happens, they're all done because of a scene that the Chekhov's gun, the thing that is like, they have it. I go, why would they have this scene in the film? And then it's like, I'm thinking about it. And then something happens later, and it's like, there you go. That's the reason. Basically the douchebag forgets his gun. The blonde headed guy forgets his gun at the store or something. I mean, at the hotel. And
he forgets his bullets,
whatever. And his buddy says, well, we either have to go back or you can just use my 22 or whatever it was. And at that point that I was like, what's the big deal? What's going on here? But the thing is, I guess in the UK or even in the States, because it could be one of those things where you can only use a certain type of gun to hunt during that time of year. The moment he fires the gun and kills the boy, they have jail sentences because they used a gun illegally to hunt.
Well, I'm not an expert on Scottish law. If somebody is, maybe they can chime in on this, but I think the problem is that he's using his friend's gun. He's not using his own gun. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it's necessarily going to be jail time. Usually something like that would get you a fine.
Well, there's a death involved.
Yeah, there's a death, but the death would have happened no matter which gun he was using.
Well, still had the lingering scent of alcohol, and one that was using cocaine as well.
Oh, yeah, alcohol is a potential problem, although by the time they... I want to know just how much these guys were drinking the night before that... The alcohol is still going to be in their system, probably 12 hours later.
Go ahead, Chrissy.
No, I was just going to say it wasn't that. It was that he had been the one guy, Vaughn, had been drinking so late and so much. And when he roused him, he didn't shower anything. And okay, everybody on this podcast knows I'm an experienced drinker. When you drink really heavily like that, even if you shower, but especially if you don't, the next day you reek of booze. You just do. It stays in your pores.
You're sweating it. Yeah. Right.
Then you're sweating it. So that was kind of when he said that, reeking of whiskey or whatever he said, I knew what he meant. It was because the guy was going to be stinking of booze to the point where, the cops weren't going to believe him. You know what I mean? Because they were going to say, you were drinking the night before. Or he just sometimes it's so bad you still smell like you're actually drunk. So right. I just kind of understood the point that was being made there. But that is true. It's not that you're not necessarily still under the influence of that alcohol 12 hours later. You're absolutely right. But seriously, it stinks. It can come out of your pores in sweating anywhere from, like, I think 12 to 24 hours afterward. So
now,
that was...
It's not like the courts are unaware of things like this. It's not like they don't have tests to check your blood alcohol level.
But the main thing is that everything they do is making it much worse. The main thing was is they used a gun illegally, and therefore that's much different. A hunting accident than using a legal gun and doing a hunting accident.
In this particular instance, I don't know if the illegal use of a gun is going to make a huge difference in the outcome because of what happened.
He's not impaired at the moment. It is clearly it's a horrible tragedy, but it is an accident. It is manslaughter.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's no, especially using a legal gun, it's definitely going to be manslaughter.
Yeah. It's only made so much fucking worse when his buddy takes out the father.
Right. So, and that's what, right. Because even the father, wasn't, he had a gun, but he wasn't pointing it at him. He wasn't pointing at him in a threatening way that it was a way that was going to be. He wasn't aiming with it.
I'm trying to ask a question here.
Yeah.
It's a hunting question because I have never been hunting, but I have an impression about something and I want to know if I have my head up my ass or not. So when the guy's sighting in on the deer before he accidentally shoots the child, he's aiming at deer's body at first, and then he switches to aim at the deer's head. Now, it is my impression that when you're hunting a deer, you're aiming for the heart because you don't want to damage the head because that's what you taxidermy. Am I wrong about that?
No, that makes sense, yeah. Yeah. But again, okay.
If he just aimed for the heart in the first place, even if the deer had moved, the shot would have gone wide, not hit the kid, and everything would have been fine. So it's that dude's fault for not knowing where to aim.
Well, I don't think he's ever really been hunting. I think he's
neither have I, but I know.
Well, here's the thing.
Oh, go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, I'm wondering if, because he was only using a 22, which is not necessarily the best.
I think it's right. It was a 22, but I'm not sure.
It was a 22. As he said, you could take my 22.
Yeah,
and that's the reason why they have to go fishing later.
It's not a 30-06, so it's not gonna. Yeah.
Mm. So I don't know if with a 22, if it's gonna have enough penetration, like in a single shot at that distance, to get through like the muscle in the rib cage and into the heart. So maybe he's also never hunted before, so he just may not have known what the fuck he was doing. And no, I am not a hunter. Just to be clear, I mean, I know right. shooting you in the head.
I mean, your heart will do
the job.
It sounds like a smart thing to go for the head, logically, because you know then it's as far as
effective death. Yes.
Yeah.
But I think that's not what you want to do if
right. no I agree
if at least if you're a serious hunter
right like they train cops to shoot center mass because the head is a harder target to hit and to get a clean shot in hitting the torso tends to be better
to do with what Eric was talking about. He was talking about the trophy worth of the
well but head. I don't know that they were hunting for trophies. I don't know what they were doing because they weren't getting a buck.
It sounded like because later at the restaurant, the Logan and his another villager gave him some food of venison. It sounded like they believed they were hunting for meat.
Right. Well, hunters technically do both. I mean, they hunt for meat because they take the body and they cut up the
yeah,
venison.
But
they also then go to the taxidermy for the head.
Vaughn and Marcus didn't come off to me as the kind of guys who wanted taxidermy. They sounded like you just wanted to do it.
Well, either way, it's really off point, right? I mean, who cares if he shot him in the head or not? The point was is that he was trying to kill the deer, and
it happened.
As Eric said, because he pointed at a certain area when the deer moved and he shot, it lined up perfectly with a child that was on the other side of the deer that he didn't see.
Right, and to be fair, if the reality is, if he'd shot at the deer's torso, he would have still shot the child because that's what the writer wanted him to do.
That's right, exactly.
It was all the writer's fault.
Damn them! Damn them to the hell!
Well, I mean, obviously that was obviously the case, right? I mean, no matter what, that was the point of the film, was the chain reaction. There was things to set it up or red herrings prior with the girls and then the using the wrong gun, because that's what causes the whole panic by Marcus, is that we're screwed no matter what, because even if we say we were self-defense because the father was going to shoot you, the point is you shot the boy in the head, killed him instantly with a gun that was illegal to use for this hunting, for just at least this incident. Therefore, we were screwed no matter what from the moment.
And killing another person and trying to cover it all up is not going to make it any better.
Well, if you get caught.
If you get caught.
If you cover up successfully, then yes, it will make it better.
And totally they were going to get caught. Because
you and I know that, but the guys in the movie don't know that.
Right. Now, Chris, you were going to say something earlier. And you let Mike go ahead, but you were going to say something that was probably interesting about both.
Oh, yeah. There was a moment where in the opening of the film, one of the things I did appreciate about this film, and I did feel at some points that it was predictable. So it feels like there's a lot of stuff in the beginning. Like, it's really well set up. But the viewer has everything they sort of need. And I think this is where this predictability may be sort of coming in. Within the first 20 minutes, everything that you're going to see later is set up, right? So it's really important to pay attention in those opening 20 minutes, because every single line in that script points to something that will come back later. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, when he goes and plays pool with the girl and he's like, I have a fiance, and she says, come drink with me. She says, we got to think about leaving here before it's too late. She had to think about that. And of course, she was talking about just getting out of the town that she grew up in, implying that she will be stuck here if she doesn't leave and get a new life. However, that right there, I flagged that line because it was a double meaning. I'm like, okay, they're going to not be able to get out of here before whatever shit goes down. But what Mike was saying and what you guys were saying earlier about shooting the deer, there's that whole line that Marcus says to Vaughn when they're driving up, where Marcus says something like, you have to – oh, what was it? He says something like – you need to switch off your emotions to shoot the deer. You just need to do it. And of course, that comes back later. It comes back at the end when he has to shoot Marcus. But it also kind of shows up in that moment when he shoots the kid. Because, yes, we see the deer kind of move, but, you know, he shoots the kid anyway. Like, it's made pretty clear to us that, you know what I mean? There was time for him not to pull that trigger. He knew what he was looking at.
That's not the impression I got.
Oh, that's the impression I got, just because of the way they shot it. I mean, I could be wrong, and, you know, whatever. I'm totally a cop to being wrong, but that was just the impression I got, that, like, he could have not pulled that trigger, and he did anyway.
The impression I got is that, and this is what kind of startled Pam and I, was that he's got the deer in his sights, and he pulled the trigger, and there was some David Copperfield shit, and there was a little kid where a deer had been. That's kind of what
it
looked like.
Very fast.
It happened really quickly.
To me, it seemed like he had already pulled the trigger by the time the deer moved.
I don't know. Chrissy may have a point there. I'll have play it in the background as we're talking. But I could see what she's saying, though. I mean, you guys could be right or probably are right. But I've seen movies where things like this has happened, where if they didn't pull the trigger, they pushed a gun up in the air or something of that nature, or the person that's with them pushes the gun away at the last moment, so the thing doesn't happen. I don't know. I mean, I kind of felt like you too, Mike, though, that, you know, I was like, holy shit. And I actually texted Eric at that moment when it happened. I go, holy shit, because, you know, it was definitely something I wasn't expecting either. But you're right, Chrissy, about everything's set up, because we meet the jerk father, you know, the guy that says,
Ryan.
Yeah. The one that's the real dirtbag at the end of the film, who's the dirtbag at the beginning. We meet the quote unquote leader of the town. We meet, exactly. And then we know they're going hunting, and we know they're going in the middle of, you know, the redneck town, and on. So it's like, everything's there set up. I mean, and then Mike, you summed it up perfectly, which is no matter what, the boy was going to get killed, whether it was the head or not, you know, whether he was an experienced hunter or not, because that's a film. That's the film. Let's see. What else do we want to talk about? Specific scenes, things that Chrissy brought up.
I just want to talk, like, the moment I thought a line got crossed was, okay, killing the kid was an accident. Killing the dad while, I think was badly executed, forgive the pun, but well-intentioned by the friend. The friend was trying to save his other friend. Even though, as Mike said, he wasn't actively aiming, still, he just killed that dude's kid. That dude's got a gun.
It's pointed.
So
I can
kind of understand it.
Oh, right. He said he was 100 yards away, too.
Okay. So up to that point, it's a horrible series of events, but I'm still like, okay. But the point where I thought they totally crossed the line is when they went back. When they go back and bury him, that is, like, obviously they're trying to cover it up, but, like, when he goes for the bullet, I'm like, dude, what? No. Oh, no.
But Mike had a good point, because it's a 22, right? You know, it's not going to go through muscle or whatnot if you go for the heart, so maybe you go for the head, assuming he was a good hunter. The point is it's going to get stuck, right? It's not going to go through like the...
I know, but I'm still like, he went digging around in that kid's skull through his brain to get the bullet back. So, well, like, I can understand when they find the dead bodies of the child and the father, whoever finds that is going to be outraged. But when they find the kid's head, dug open. What? Yeah, that makes it so much worse in my eyes.
Right. Well, let's put this in front of a jury for a minute. All right. First of all, there's no witnesses to this that we know of.
Right.
So it's their word against anybody else's. So all they need to do is come up with a story and stick with it. Mm-hmm. And
well, they're still doomed because they used an illegal gun to shoot.
No, but they're not stuck doomed, on Phil. You're stuck on doomed, and I don't think you know what doomed means.
Reason why everything happened. That's the reason why they covered it up, was because they used the illegal.
They would have got right. I understand that, but they're not doomed. They've got a little bit of trouble because of the gun, but that's a separate crime than accidentally killing the kid or accidentally shooting the kid. It's a hunting accident. That shit happens. Now, the fact by the time they get to now
it was done by an illegal gun.
Yes, we know, Phil.
Get that,
don't
Phil,
have to keep
but it
saying
doesn't.
That. The fact that the legal gun has nothing to do with anything.
Right, and it's going to be a jury trial. It was using his. This wasn't an illegal gun that they broke into a store and stole it from, or they bought off the black market. It was his friend's gun. He shouldn't have been using because he wasn't licensed to use his friend's gun.
Right, and that's.
I understand that, but they weren't going to send him to jail for 20 years because he was using his friend's gun. They weren't. It's a jury. These are human beings. They're judges, juries. They are going to you put the story in context. It's fine. Problem is, shithead douchebag is using coke. That's going to stay in the system. So they're definitely going to test his blood. Number two, he shoots. You know if they come up with I was 100 yards away, if you're 100 yards away, how do you know what's going on? They're going to have to lie and say that the father or the uncle was pointing the gun at the guy.
No, that's not a lie, though. He was pointing the gun.
In a threatening manner, Phil. Pointing the gun in a threatening manner.
I thought it was threatening based off of what I was watching.
That's not how you shoot a gun, and the guy knows knew how to
shoot. He was going to pull the gun sooner or later.
Yeah, it's your skill.
But he hadn't yet.
But he hadn't yet, you're on really thin ice. But it doesn't matter. As long as they keep their story consistent about that, they're okay. The second they bury the bodies,
right,
drag them out of the way,
mm-hmm.
You can even make the case of running away in panic and feeling bad about it. Right. I think a normal person can understand, right, that. In that circumstance, somebody doing that. Nobody, not saying that they endorse it, but it's a very human reaction, understandable reaction. Mm-hmm. Everything that comes after that is okay. Especially if it's the guy who was going to shoot his friend. All right. But of course, they could test the blood for alcohol. That should pass. They can always take their time coming back to town too, to let whatever's in their system work their way out a little bit better. They're going to have to take what's coming to them one way or another, because it's hard to hide a body. It really is.
Not necessarily.
No, it is.
There's dozens
Phil's got 10 in his backyard.
There's dozens of bodies in the desert and in the Jersey swamps that will never be found.
Well, they're not in the desert or in the Jersey swamps.
Dude, more crimes, they never find the body than you really think they do.
And here's the thing, though. If it were me in that situation, I probably wouldn't have even gone to see the body. Like, if I'm that dude and I see through the scope that kid for a second before he falls down, I'm just like, let's go.
Right. Well, obviously, if they're going to bury the body, they had to move the bodies. They couldn't have, by doing it where they were camping, it was a good chance it was going to be found.
Right, but they tried to set it up so people wouldn't know they were there.
Right.
They tried to leave a false trail, and that was the other thing, is that like they try and set up this whole convoluted story about how they were actually further up north hunting, and it doesn't work out well for them. They fucked up so many things, and at some point before they buried the bodies, probably the thing that would have given them the best chance of not spending their entire life in prison is turning themselves in. But they didn't go that route. They decided to try and cover it up.
Well, that's another thing, right? They're in the middle of nowhere, so they're worried about local law enforcement. Fine. What you do is, like Mike said, if you're going to panic and you don't want to go to local law enforcement, you get in your car and you drive.
You leave. Right.
You drive to the state or county cops and you turn yourself in away from the locals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they probably should have done.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I agree.
Or just
hey, we all agreed on something. Yay.
Except the problem is douchebag was high on coke or had coke in his system.
Yeah, but again, that wasn't what he was worried about. He was more worried about the fact that you just killed somebody with a gun that you shouldn't, so you're doomed.
I'm quoting him,
and I'm doomed because it's my gun. That's what he says right after it happens. He said it was because you shouldn't have been using it, and I shouldn't have, and it's owned by me, so I'm in trouble just like you're in trouble, and we're both fucked. At least, and that's what they said in the movie, Mike.
I don't think they would have been fucked.
Right, but either way,
they would have gotten in trouble. Don't get me wrong, but once they go to I don't know Scottish law at all, but unless there's some weird thing going on in Scottish law that I'm not aware of, you're taking something that is maybe a very very short prison term, maybe even
$500 fine.
A fine with the gun, and an accident, and you're turning it into now years in prison, many years in prison because the act of the cover up, and I know the guy's like helping to protect his friend, and again people can understand that, and they're like, well, you know, you're protecting your friend, and you were helping him because he was trying to protect you, or you're supporting each other, but you kind of stood there and let him butcher the kid's face.
Yeah.
That is a thing that you're going to have a hard time getting past a jury.
Every decision after that, the initial shots were fired, just escalated the punishment that we were receiving one after the other. You know, they just kept making things worse and worse.
Well, I would just like to say that there's a different. Right, if I go into the woods and fire a gun that I'm not supposed to, and someone sees me doing it. You're right, Mike. I get a fine, maybe overnight prison for one day, and maybe 30 hours of community service or something, and forced to go to gun school. But if I go in the forest with that gun and I fire and I mistakenly shoot and kill somebody, I'm fucked. It's much different.
Well, and here's the thing, Phil. You keep on harping on the fact that they're not supposed to be using that gun. I think if you shoot and kill a child, the fact that you were using a gun illegally versus using a gun illegally to fire that shot is not going to make a lick of difference in the term served for killing a child. That's my point.
Well, that's the thing. If you were in the woods legally with the gun and you fired and you shot someone, so like if I went to the forest this weekend with the Amherst recreation group and we were all shot on mistake, those hunters would probably either have no jail time or they would be reckless endangerment at the most. But if they used illegal guns and did it, then they're fucked.
I disagree. I think you're inflating the importance of the gun being technically illegal.
Well, because you can run over a child on mistake, and a lot of people have unfortunately done that, and that child dies, and a lot of times you don't even there's no jail time because they know you weren't reckless when you were driving, you just happened to run them over. However, if you're driving drunk or you're driving 60 miles an hour down the road like a punk, and you run the kid over, you're going to jail as manslaughter. So
completely different circumstance because you're putting yourselves in a position where you're driving recklessly because your judgment's impaired. If this guy was using his own gun, the same thing almost certainly would have happened.
No, I said two examples, Mike. The other example was just a punk, an 18-year-old kid being a jerk speeding 60 miles an hour on a side road and runs over a kid. You could go to jail for that because that's manslaughter, and you weren't drunk.
Well, but you're also speeding.
Right. You're also using a gun illegally.
But again, he would have been using a gun legally, right? If he had his own gun, the same thing would have happened. If the if the punk kid was driving at the speed limit on the road.
We really need to move on, guys.
But that's my point. If he had used, he had his own gun and he used his own gun and shot the kid.
We're not moving on.
I don't think he would have been in trouble.
All right. Well, so we're going to agree to disagree. If anybody knows anything about Scottish law and want to shed some light on how this would be interpreted, please chime in. We would love to hear from you.
All right.
Oh, boy.
So.
So they go back to town with the plan to go back in the middle of the night, stab the kid in the face a bunch of times because he was an ugly little punk.
I gotta say though, like the whole movie, I thought that moment was the most effective because there's no dialogue. You just the one guy who took the initial shot is digging the hole, and the other guy is going around trying to be clever, and he finds the one bullet lodged in a log, and pries it out with his knife. And puts it in his pocket, and then realizes, like, you see him look at the kid's corpse, and then he puts his hand around back of the kid and brings it out, and there's no blood on it, so he knows the bullet didn't go all the way through. And then you're just like, and he's still got the knife in his hand, and he looks down at it, and you're just like, oh, no.
Well, two things I felt at that point. Yeah. One is I felt... if he was going to try to cover up the crime, he was correct. However, the thing that outweighed all that to me during that whole scene was when he looked at the boy and he looked up like, oh no, I was thinking that he was about to say, you know what? We didn't kill this boy. And then we just, killed the father on mistake. In other words, I thought there was going to be a big twist where they're going to find out.
Oh, you thought he was going to realize that the caliber of the bullet in the kid was different than the gun they were using.
Exactly.
But we saw the kid standing up.
The movie. I got you. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. So I thought that was a big twist about to happen, and then they didn't, and they just went with pulling the bullet out of the kid's skull. But I was like, no way, this is going to be awesome, and then no, because for a second there, I was like, okay, well, I like these guys too much that I don't think they're really that bad and going to fuck it up. So I could see this big twist.
He'll come into the frat boy defense again.
Well, I don't consider it a frat boy, Mike. You're the one that always springs that crap up, not me. What I'm saying is that these people are humans, even if they did something stupid. And this guy here was about to... to these two guys here, who I liked up until the crime itself, we're going to find out that they were actually innocent. And then, of course, I was wrong. But that's
well, and there is an interesting moment there. This was one of the things in the movie that I thought was actually kind of well done. Was there's a moment when I believe it's when they get back from, I guess, burying the bodies, and he says, oh, I'm gonna wake you up in a couple of hours. And then we see him go in his room, mm-hmm. and he's looking at the cocaine, and you know, Marcus has been the one pushing, and he really did do it to protect his friend, even if he is misguided. And in that moment when he's in his room by himself, he has a meltdown. Like, he just starts getting really upset. And I was like, that created sympathy for me, for Marcus, because I realized at that moment he was really in an impossible situation. Like, it was almost like things just kind of got out of hand. None of this was, you know, and yes, he was a cokehead and all of that, but still, he wasn't a malicious person. And every time he had to make a decision, it was like, okay, no, like, this is what we're going to do. You have to get that bullet out of the brain because it's going to trace back to me. And like, you're sitting here going, oh my God, this is horrible. No way. But a few scenes later, when we get that scene of him just kind of having a meltdown, you feel bad. You kind of realize what's going on.
I love Marcus. And I'll tell you why. Because his buddy fucked up by forgetting his bullets because he's an idiot. His buddy fucked up and he kills a kid. His buddy
he's covering up for her, and he gets keeps on just getting dragged in because his buddy's a fuck up. And like you said, Chrissy, at that point he just melts down because just the day before was normal.
You're also missing forgetting stuff like, I mean, forgetting the fact that the buddy stood up for him back when they talk about that way back when they were in boarding school or military school, whatever the hell they were in, which they talk about. So there's a history of the friend, the two friends sticking up for each other. But he's still a bit of a douche nozzle.
I think that scene at the fireplace was really a solid moment of just kind of humanizing everybody. I did think the very fact that we see this the complete doubt Marcus has, that even though he had all these plans to try to somehow get him out of there, because what Vaughn says, you know, because you're wrong, Marcus, because you wouldn't be asking me if you weren't. And it's true, because the situation was just unwinnable at that point.
Right.
And it was just, but it was just a really scary moment where you're just like, you can see how completely defeated they are. You know, it was just all pretty much the way it was going. It was just a matter of time. They were only just pretty much delaying the inevitable. Because it wasn't
Right.
You know,
yeah, I mean, it's a movie, so we knew they were going to get caught.
No, I'm still saying, but they had one hell of a tracker dog, too.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. That's what I was talking about earlier, Eric, which is by burying the bodies where the crime occurred was not going to let them get away with it because the people were camping at the spot where they were killed. And so the first place people are going to go to look for them is at the campground where they knew they were at. And that's where they were buried. And if you bring a dog.
Oh, you're talking about the victims.
Yes.
Sorry. I thought you were talking about the guys that were hunting. I misunderstood.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Okay. But at the same time, I think trying to transport the bodies would have increased the risk of them getting caught sooner.
Yeah. Right. I mean, as it is, they're leaving trails. I mean, who are the people who are going to go through these woods? Are going to be hunters that know how to track. So they're leaving trails, going through the woods, carrying bodies are going to make it even worse. I get the impression that they were at least a distance from the car and the car from their hotel, because otherwise they could have just turned back and gotten the bullets.
Right.
I mean, the problem is, you know, you're going forward. At no point are they having a conversation as to what they're going to do. But in all likelihood, Vaughn is in no mental shape to be making decisions at that point.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah.
So I think it's just, you know, a lot of bad decisions, and they just gone simply. Like I said, I think it's very obvious that this is going to be almost impossible to cover up. You know, you have as far as they know, a father and a son, or you know, but a man and a young boy. They're going to be missed. You know, he jumps to the conclusion, oh, you know, they're camping, they must be tourists. That's completely comes out of his ass.
It kind of makes sense, but it's still
they still see this.
Yeah, it's right. You know, it makes sense, but it's just an assumption,
right?
And they're definitely going to be missed. You're absolutely right.
And one of the problems that you also have is that if you listen to what people are saying in that town, that the town is dead, right? They have this festival coming up, but nobody's really there to celebrate it. You basically have the townies and two guys who are there to go hunting, who, you know, caused a bunch of shit at the town and disappeared. They checked out early for no particular reason. I think, you know, and I'm sure they had to, like, leave their contact information at the hotel they were staying at, right? I mean,
yeah, credit card, whatever.
It's not going to take Sherlock Holmes to figure out who murdered these two people.
That's correct. Right. Only way to get away with it is to have the bodies disappear for good.
Right, and they couldn't do that. They just couldn't. What they needed to do and what they didn't do was to grab the bodies and, again, you know, find a way to haul it over however much distance they had to get them back to the cars, put them in the cars, drive them. God knows how fucking far away they were going to go, and
have a pint and wait for all of it to blow over.
Yeah, and somehow not be pulled over, not be spotted, not leave a whole bunch of evidence in the car, not leave any evidence at the crime scene. I mean, there's all sorts of things that was going to happen that they just weren't ready to do.
Well, if there's no bodies, there would be no real crime scene, right? It's out in the middle of nowhere.
But there were bodies. Where were
the bodies? No. If they'd taken the bodies away, there would be no crime scene.
But where? How were they getting the bodies away?
I'm not saying that they could or they would.
Right. I mean,
if they had, it would have been in the trunk of the car, obviously.
Right. If they, you know? but they weren't in a position where they could do that. You know, it's like I said, at just a few minutes, I think of and look in that situation, people are going to panic and do stupid shit. But if they had a few moments of sober thought, and you know, they should have realized this was going to be what happened. That they were going to end up exactly where they ended up.
Oh, right. There's no doubt that they should have just went back to London or wherever they came from, Glasgow or wherever, and gone into the police station there, because they would know they're not going to get – well, you assume the cops are not going to be the same there. And they just turn themselves in. That's what they should have done. However, yeah, they panicked and they screwed up because they were worried about, again, using an illegal gun for hunting, and they shot a kid. And then, as Abe said, they just keep on making more and more stupid decisions. And yeah, once you try to cover it up, you could be considered, I don't know, definitely at least second degree murder probably at that point, but I have no idea.
So now, Phil, you were talking about how you had some issues with the ending.
Sure.
I didn't. So why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, all right. Well, I felt that – I mean, again, this is a small town in a country that I'm not familiar with, even though one of my best friends is right from Scotland. I don't really talk to him about this, and I think he came from a bigger area. But – It was hard to believe that these town folk weren't going to get the constable involved immediately.
Because really?
The moment they went hunting for the kids or had their suspicions and they take them prisoners, they are kidnapping. Even though they're guilty of a crime, they're now breaking laws as well.
So you don't think that small town justice exists?
I'm saying that I think there's enough people in that town that would not agree with small town justice.
I think the problem is that the constable, the sheriff, the law enforcement would have been involved with this from the get-go, right? Is that you got a man and his nephew missing in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would have been involved in the manhunt.
Right.
You know, so they certainly would have been involved in this from the beginning. You know,
Right.
That's a good point.
So, but, you know, and I, you know, speaking as someone who lives in a small town, maybe not quite as small and as backwoods, I think there is a lot of preying upon the fear and the stereotypes, the deliverance sort of story, you know, of what a rural area is, and not all rural areas are filled with backwood drunken rednecks, you know, waiting to murder you because you done slept with their sister.
No, some of them have only children and worship he who walks behind the rose.
Well, there's them.
But yeah, that was one of the first things I felt was unfortunate. And then once the small town justice occurred and they decided to go over the edge, I would have thought they would have just shot the two or beat them up to a pulp and then brought them to the cops. Because once they shoot them, they're going to have to now dispose of the bodies. But and people, and even the guy, the Logan, he even says people are going to be looking for these people. So whether or not, I mean, obviously they set up a story and that one just drives away or whatever. But that it was a little odd because, you know, the other family is still going to be saying, where the hell's Marcus? And then they're having to have a lot of people cover up crimes. And then they let the other guy go when I don't believe they would have let the other guy go. I mean,
well, yeah, they may be right about that, but there was at least some justification in that they all knew that that guy was expecting to have a child. So they didn't want to punish that child, take his father away. So instead they punished him by making him kill his friend and live with that for the rest of his life.
Well, and also, again, what getting back to court, sort of what we were saying before, let's a reasonable jury, you get the story. What's the story? I accidentally shot a child. I thought I was shooting the deer moved, the kid was behind it, I killed the deer. That's an accident, can happen to anybody, you know, who's out there hunting. Right. And this is a community where a lot of them have hunted. They could see themselves. Then
I
what
won't
happens?
Say it, Eric. I won't say it.
What?
But he was using an illegal gun.
Phil, do you think those fucking villagers care that he was using an illegal gun?
That's why I'm saying I'm not going to say it. Like, I don't
good.
Right. That's why. But you said it by not saying it. So
not.
They're not going to give a shit. But then you have. Oh, and then what happened? Well, and then, you know, and I'm assuming he's telling them the truth, right, when they've nailed him, right?
Sure.
He's going to tell them.
We don't know.
So the guy's standing next to me. He's holding his gun, which is generally pointing in my direction, but he was not threatening me with it. And my friend 100 yards away somehow doesn't really know what's going on and just shoot the guy.
That's implying way too much. I think he probably told what they thought was going to happen, which is the father.
Oh, I don't know what he thought was going to happen. At no point does anyone in this film say that they thought that the uncle was going to shoot him. At no point did they say that the uncle was threatening them.
That's what happened was the guy had the gun. He was pointing it at him and he was shot. Whether or not he was threatening or going to do it, we don't know. And we don't know what Vaughn said to these town folk.
I'm saying, so, but in all likelihood, he's telling, because they decide not to tell us, we have no reason to think he's going to tell them anything other than what it is that we've seen.
Right. He's what he's going to say.
This is a guy they don't like. This is the guy that took the lead of everything that happened after the kid was shot. Every decision made was his decision. Right. He's the one that fucked up his face. He's the one that said, this is what we're going to do. And this guy has been following along. Not clearing them off from this, but if you're going to have going to come up with a reason to show some lenience towards one person, he's the one that you'd be more likely to show some leniency to.
I don't know. And I don't know what Vaughn said to the sound folk. If he told them the way you said it, you're absolutely right. But I wouldn't think Vaughn would have been that way. I would have thought he would have said the exact thing that I felt was going on, which is, the guy had the gun. He was pointing it at me. We don't know if he's going to shoot it, but he held my gun and it was pointing at me. And my friend was 100 yards away, saw this, and he shot him because he...
100 yards away. So at this point, he doesn't even know that there was a kid killed.
The point is he got shot. He shot the guy, and Vaughn knows why he shot. So basically, Marcus was worried Vaughn was going to get shot, and that's what Vaughn believed as well.
Would have been nice if somebody had said that at some point in the film.
Well, we know why Marcus shot him. Marcus didn't shoot the guy just for the hell of it.
We assume. But we also don't know how good his judgment was at that time.
Yes, we do. He came right over and he said, I shot him because I thought he was going to kill you.
Did he say that? I don't remember him saying that.
He did. He said, I thought he was going to kill you. I just saved your life.
Anybody want to chime in? I don't remember that particular
thing. I don't remember those specific words, but I got that impression.
Yeah, the way he made it sound is like he was trying to protect his friend, but the problem is that he didn't feel it was enough of justification for what happened because he was so close that if he tried to explain it, the authorities wouldn't believe him.
But the point is, though, the main point, Mike, is that Vaughn knows that Marcus didn't shoot him just for the hell of it.
Oh, I know it's not saying they shot him for just for the hell of it, but I think he was premature in shooting him.
Yes.
I'm not disagreeing with you there. Yeah, that's fair.
That was my point, is that, you know, he doesn't entirely know what's going on. If he's 100 yards away, he can't hear the exchange. He doesn't know the tone in the guy's voice, although obviously he's upset. But again, he's not holding the gun in a particularly threatening manner. It's very easy
That's still debatable.
Oh my god! You guys just need to fuck already.
Well, no, no, I'm not arguing with that figure. I'm just saying that
I'm a shipper, so I'm all over that. So,
but when I'm not arguing with Mike. I'm just saying when I saw the film in that scene, I was concerned the father was going to blow his brains out.
I was concerned he was going to, but I don't think he was in the minute. Second he got shot, you know, I was concerned that it was going to escalate to that point. I didn't get the sense that it was at that point.
My impression is that it was headed there, but it was not. It was not 1 second away. It was 30 seconds away.
You're probably right. Right. And so Marcus had to make a split decision, and he made probably the wrong decision. But if Vaughn was telling the town folk, I would think he would say the fact that they believe that the father was – I just shot his son. The father was in distress. He had now had my gun. He was pointing at me, which doesn't mean he's threatening or not, but he was pointing at him. And Marcus, thinking I was in danger, shot him.
Well, here's the thing, though. I have a feeling that instead of taking a shot, if Marcus had run up, because I think there was enough time for him to get there before anything happened, that's my personal opinion, and just said, look, friend, it was an accident. Give me the gun. Give me the gun. I think that would have worked.
Right. Now, let me ask you this. Why do you think they didn't show Vaughn explaining what happened? And I'm thinking is because he may have lied to protect himself and just throw Marcus under the bus.
No, because we had already seen that whole story, and it's boring to watch somebody tell the exact same story you just watched for 90 minutes.
Right, yeah. That was just like a...
I think if he lied, they would have shown it, because shown us having him lie, and they've done nothing in the film up to that point to make us think he's a liar. So I think if he was lying, that would be terrible, terrible filmmaking,
mm-hmm.
right? And horrible craftsmanship. So I have no reason to think he was doing anything but telling them the truth, because he's told, like, if your only way out of this is to tell us the truth, and he wants out of this. And I'm sorry, but most of the shit that goes wrong after the moment, it's Marcus that fucks everything up.
He's leading it for sure.
Right.
And his buddy's going along with it because he doesn't know what else to do. He certainly doesn't have a better plan.
Oh, he's certainly complicit. There's no question. Like, it's, you know, that he would be at the very least an accessory, and depending on what the charges are, you know, be hit with the same things, even though he didn't, you know, stab the kid in the face.
Well, again,
he didn't stop him from doing it either.
Right.
But again, the boy's dead at that point. So it's really just covering up the crime by removing.
Yeah. Evidence.
Tell that to his, well, I guess his dad is dead too.
So yeah. So this
is, tell it to his uncle.
This is where the humanity of the people sitting in the jury and the judge come in, is that while there's a good chance that they'll understand the whole thing with the gun, they are not going to sign off stabbing the kid, and, you know, digging through the kid's face to get a bullet out.
And that group of people that uncovered the bodies, I have a feeling it was so much worse.
Oh,
uncovering
that
kid with a massive hole in the middle of his head, dug out with a knife, than it would have been just with a little bullet hole.
Oh yeah,
I thought that was a very well done moment as well.
Yeah,
there. Well, but they're all just huddled there, and you know, you're distanced, right? You're watching from a distance with the other two characters, and you just hear their gut reactions as they're digging this up. Yeah. And I thought that was a really powerful moment.
It's left to your imagination just how bad it was.
Yeah, see, but I didn't get the fact that they were horrified because of any skull degree. I got the fact they were horrified because they said, oh my god, we found our two, they're dead.
No, it's both. But it's worse because they dug a big fucking hole in his head.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could be right. Again, they didn't show the bodies or whatnot. They just showed them digging up and finding corpses.
I understand, but use your imagination. You saw what the kid looked like with a little bullet hole in his head. Do you think it's better or worse after that guy went at him with a knife to get the bullet out?
No, I agree. But again, I think that just knowing that your two family members are dead because they're all intermarried. They're all like first cousins in this town. All the people. That's what they said. They're all from the
Did
same
they say
family.
It?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I missed that.
Yeah, that's they're all related. This is my brother.
Yeah.
This is my yeah. They're all related to.
Yeah, in Phil's defense, they do say that.
All right.
Yeah, so all the people.
Ding, ding, ding.
Well, that happens with a lot of those towns, right. Wherever you are, because the towns were founded before mass transit was a thing. Highways were a thing. So if you weren't everyone who settles into that an area for a town, if they're not married in the first generation, they're all going to be related within two or three generations.
That's correct. Yeah, especially these small towns, absolutely. Especially when they're isolated, too. So when they find the bodies, I mean, I thought, obviously, you're right, Eric. I mean, disfigured bodies are bad, too. But, I mean, when you find, I mean, I just figured that they found the bodies and they were horrified.
But remember later in the movie, when one of the things they yell at these guys when they finally catch them, is how could you do that to us? You didn't even tell us, right? So it's not only the fact that the crime was committed, it was the fact that they tried to cover it up and then desecrated a child's corpse by getting that bullet out of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Again, though, no one ever mentions the desecration of the corpse. But they do mention.
They don't have to. They really don't have to.
Right. I understand. But you know, when you find your two people dead and they did it and then they covered it up, I mean, that's enough.
So you don't think it's worse with a hole dug in the kid's head?
I agree. It's
oh, okay, it's then what are we arguing about?
I know, we're kind of going
circles here. Because we're arguing about why they're horrified about how...
Well, because they mutilated the corpse.
But we don't know why they're horrified. I'm saying they got horrified because the moment they dig up the bodies, they find the bodies.
And one of them has a huge hole in its head.
Right, and they never mention it later in the film. They never say, and you had to do that to the kid by ripping it, put a hole in his head.
It's called the human reaction, Phil. That is how people would react to that.
Later in the film, Eric made a good point, which is you killed them and then you didn't tell anybody. You would also think, and they would say other things. If the writer wanted us to have
That was Logan who says that, and Logan is the one who's being rational throughout the whole thing, right? Am I correct?
Yes.
I don't remember.
Logan, he's
rational until the end.
If it was the other one, he'd be like, "Yeah, killed the boy and a skull fucked him too." You know, that would be
Jesus Christ.
That would be the other guy.
No, Logan was trying to be rational. He was the one who wanted to try to get the authorities involved at the end. But it was Brian and most of the other townsfolk who were against that and wanted to get town vengeance on these two.
Right. Yeah, they specifically say the word vengeance. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. And that's what it's all about, is vengeance, not justice, per se.
Well, and I did want to make one other comment about this movie as well. In many ways, this is almost like, which I find kind of interesting, but it's almost like a Lady Macbeth thing with these two guys, right? The guilt is really starting to drive them both kind of over the edge.
Mm-hmm.
Their own
definitely,
guilt.
Definitely Vaughn.
But it's their own guilt and paranoia that makes them more suspicious characters where they do stupid things, right?
Okay,
for example, when the guys go up to them and they say, you know, the father and the son have been lost in the woods, would you join the search party? You know, and that was sort of like their opportunity to completely eradicate any suspicion. They should have just been like, absolutely, of course, we understand what you're going through. We will help you. Instead, they're so freaked out and nervous and guilty and paranoid that they just kind of don't answer right away, which makes them look suspicious. And then they're thinking about it and it's like, okay. And then they get in the car And I forget which one of it, which one says it, but they say they're on to us. They're trying to our hand.
Marcus,
okay.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of like, no, dude, at that point, they really were just asking you to join a search party and help them because they are a small community and because there is a large surface area to cover. I don't think they necessarily...
Do you know
what I mean? So
yeah,
they made themselves bigger targets. Like, okay, when they're running the, and all those people are digging up the body.
Well, I'll tell you
they
why.
They just stand there. They don't react. They just stand there and watch. It's like if you really were going to cover up your fucking tracks, you'd be over there pretending to be horrified too. Like,
right.
You know,
I had that thought.
I'll give you that. But I'll tell you why they asked that Marcus was right when they said they're on to us. Because when he mistakenly said a plural about the missing people, when they were only talking in the bar about the child missing.
Oh, he also made the mistake of knowing that it was a child.
Right. Yeah, that's
yeah.
When he said that, one of the good guys, Logan's brother or friend or whatever he was, suddenly became suspicious. And that's when Marcus figured it out too. He says, okay, and that's how why Marcus was right when he said they're on to us. Again, they didn't think they were guilty necessarily, but it was pointing in their direction.
Well,
there
was suspicious behavior.
Yeah. Well, right. There was a moment actually when they're in the woods, Logan actually goes up to several other townspeople and says, keep an eye on them.
Yes. That's true.
Yep, that's true too.
Well,
yeah,
but the keep an eye on them could just have been keep an eye on these knuckleheads so they don't get lost in the woods.
Yeah, but that wasn't.
But I think, brace yourself here, Chrissy. But this is a good example of, you know, where they're being betrayed by their own guilty conscience. It's in fact very Poe-esque.
Yes. Yes. And I deliberately did not say that in my last comment. I wanted to go there, and instead I said Lady Macbeth.
Poe Shakespeare, it's all the same.
But you're right. Yeah, right. Because their own behavior is what's making them become suspicious.
Well, and that's
amplified with them, but that we see the perspective of the townsfolk actually saying or pointing towards them. But go on, Mike.
Right, and well, and that's why for the vast majority of criminals, their behavior ends up giving them away. You know, and it's anybody who gets like arrested, you know, there's going to be anxiety, there's going to be unease, there's going to be uncertainty. But when you know what you did, you know what you did. There's always that suspicion. There's always that paranoia. You know, unless you're an absolutely, truly fucked up sociopath,
these guys weren't sociopaths,
right? So these are guys who just fucked up, and it's this is all human error. And I think we all can understand everything that they went through, right? I think we can understand the emotions of the townies
everything in this movie is understandable and horrible and unfortunate.
That's that's what makes the real tragedy so much more palatable, is the very fact that it's for the most part very believable and very grounded. And it's just like every decision is, you know, bad. Even the worst ones are very understandable because you see where they're coming from, and it just becomes this maelstrom mess of just panic and distrust and everything like that. And even by the end, the rational Logan fails to solve the problem because he kind of settles on a dark path to quote unquote to bring a resolution to everything.
Right. Yeah. Because Logan basically gets bullied to give in to the darker side of the town, and not to excuse him because he still could have said fuck you, but I can understand how he fell and followed the path of the darker side of the town because of, you know, the anger that they all had. And for the guys, yeah, I agree, Abe, because I mean, Mike may not like Marcus because he thought he was a punk or whatever.
Not a punk. He was a douche. There's a difference.
Well, right. So you didn't like him because you felt he was a douche.
I didn't like him. I just think he's a douche.
Okay, you felt he was a douche. I liked both guys a lot. Especially I liked Marcus a hell of a lot, and I liked Vaughn a little less, but I still liked them. And so the tension throughout the film was, yeah, you want them to be not guilty. So when I thought that big twist was going to happen, I was hoping for it, and it didn't happen. But you also don't want them to get caught either, because as you said, Mike, they're not bad people. Chrissy said that, and it's just bad luck. Everything happened, and then they fucked up by trying to cover everything up. So I felt the director / screenwriter, same person, did a good job to make at least me like both of these guys a lot.
Well, and I have something to kind of say as well, with regard to another thing kind of going on in this movie with the guilty conscience and all that. You know, the friend who is the drug addict, Marcus, the mention of his father dying, and there is a very, again, this set up in the beginning where there's a very pointed statement. You know, how long has it been? Oh, 3 years. And I don't miss him. Now, why I wanted to bring this up specifically is because I personally felt that the last shot in this film where Vaughn is holding his newborn son, so obviously at least 8 or 9 months or possibly even a year has gone by. Because I didn't actually see the age of the baby. I couldn't gauge the age. So the baby could have been a couple months old and still cry like that. But it just, the last frame is this haunted look at the end. So in a way, Marcus says he doesn't miss his father. And now Vaughn's child does have his father because, you know, these people in this town showed him mercy and let him live. However, he's never really going to know his father because his father is Vaughn is never going to tell his son that he did all that. I can guarantee you.
Well, he's
there's also
a person too.
Right. But my point is that we have the setup in the beginning of Marcus being distanced from his father and not missing him. And there is an implication there that Vaughn.
You talk about the blonde haired guy or the brown haired guy?
No, the brown haired guy is Marcus. The coke guy is Marcus. So there's a setup at the beginning, the douche. There's a setup at the beginning that Marcus's relationship with his father was not great, and that's why he missed him. He didn't miss him. That is what is exactly what is implied in the last shot of that film. When Vaughn gives the camera that haunting look, just that really haunting, traumatized look, which was stunning, as he's holding his crying newborn son. And to me, that immediately said, okay, Vaughn is going to end up having a difficult relationship with his son because of this too. And there may be distance down the road. Will his son not miss him? And also his son is never going to really know him. Never going to really know what went on. No father is going to tell his son that shit. Unless, you know, there's some kind of weird circumstance where, you know, you don't want your son to know that you did that, you know? And the other interesting thing is that this title of this movie, you know, I was like, oh, caliber, guns, you know, but think about it. Caliber is also a word that we use to talk about someone or something that is a very high quality, right?
Yeah, the measure of their worth.
Of their worth. So what this movie is talking about subtextually, I think, with all of this, or one of the things, in my opinion, that it's talking about is, how good of a person are you really? Do you do the right thing? What is your caliber?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah.
That's a great call, Chrissy. Good observation.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a great double meaning because of the 22 caliber and yep. and then this, your point of the other reason, or I mean the meaning of the word. Yeah, it's true. The reason I consider this the endings of is similar to other movies. For example, Deliverance, the guy wakes up middle of the night sweating, he's hiding a secret. Cheap Thrills.
I'll accept that answer.
cheap Thrills. He kills his friend, and then he goes home with all the money, and the baby's crying there, and so that was like a last shot from Cheap Thrills. And
yeah, that's the ending, right? Yeah, my sense before you were comparing the film as a whole to those movies.
Oh no! I'm only talking. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Oh, so because you do have like the decision to be made at the end.
Right.
The no win decision.
Right. Exactly. And then the other movie was Would You Rather? The same thing, where she has to make a decision and gets the money, and then of course her ending is horrible in that film. I won't give that film away because of another twist that happens, but. I felt there's a lot of these films it takes from. I mean, it may not be intentional, but
I was going to say I don't think the filmmakers would cite those as influences, but I can see where you're coming from.
Yeah. So that's why I felt, because it's like Mike said, the word was the making the tough decision, and the decision that you make if you're a Christian person or you know, you're damning your soul, basically, even though you get to walk away.
Mm. Well, and the question is, would it have been less punishment to kill him? Now he's got to go through this life harboring the secret, knowing every day what happened, what he did.
It depends.
And trying to set an example for his son,
when
he knows what he's done.
And honestly,
depends on the type of person he is, each individual.
Well, that's what I was going to get at, because, you know, the Vaughn that we knew at the beginning is no longer there. You know, that's right now what we see at the end is a shadow of his former self. So he's been transformed by what he's went through. And that could not only strain his relationship with his son, but his wife as well. I mean, he's very distant. He's very jumpy. He's clearly not having. He's having trouble sleeping because at the end of the film we find him sitting up in the middle of the night. He's a completely twisted and transformed individual by what he's gone through and what he has done.
Right, and we're talking about at least 9 months later, if not 14 or 18 months later, and it's still eating him away, and it'll probably eat away for his whole life. And I think that he's in trouble. I mean, like I told you, Eric, I would have probably just blew my brains out right after the whole incident for fucking up. But they decided to do something else. But Chris, you were gonna say something?
Oh, I was just gonna say there's also a reference earlier to the ending that kind of foreshadows that haunting look at the end too, where there's a couple of references to, he's terrified to be a dad to begin with.
Right.
He really is very unsure of himself and very scared as it is. Then it just made it worse. You know,
I was looking at him at the beginning because he's kind of floppy. In other words, you know, he doesn't really take care of how he looks, you know, his hair is messy and all that, so, which is fine. You know, I mean, that's maybe just be a style, but the way he dressed and the way he acted and the worries he said, Chrissy, all those things made me feel that he was living on the margins anyway, like a marginal person. And I think this just like makes it even worse, because if you're already having the stress about money and being a father and you know, we don't even know what type of work he has and all this, and then now you have this upon you where you killed two people and possibly three if you want to include the boy's father that was killed, then it just makes his life even worse to the point, I mean, he's just gone. He's a shell.
Well, and I also think it's interesting too that there's very obviously placed signs, and when that shooting happens, that accidental shooting, you know, of both the son and the father, they are in a place called Raven's Fell.
Poesque.
And, yep, well, actually, I'm not going to scream Poesque on this one. However, what I am going to say is that the symbolism of the Raven is incredibly complex. And most often it's associated with loss and an ill omen, right? So like unfortunate something is coming. And I think that was definitely done by the director intentionally. And when the son gets shot, you don't hear the ravens. But when the father gets shot, you hear the ravens in the background.
Nevermore.
So that kind of tells me that, okay, they might have been okay had they just done the right thing and reported the son's accidental death.
Right.
But they didn't. And so, anyway, I just did want to point that out because that was – I mean, there wasn't a whole lot in this film to dissect for me, but I think the stuff that is there is very significant and very well-placed.
Yeah, it's more not really – I mean, maybe there is a lot of symbolism, and we're just all missing it, Chrissy. But the lot of things engage kind of –
Chrissy doesn't miss symbolism. What are you talking about?
Yeah, we miss symbolism. Chrissy doesn't miss symbolism.
Engage kind of when I was talking to him offline about, you know, there's a lot to say in this film, talk about. And there is. I think it's more talking about just the moral decisions how to get out of a crime. Are these people bad? You know, who are, you know, things like that. So there's a lot to talk about. It's just not necessarily, you know, literary references.
Well, and I appreciated that this movie was very straightforward. I think if they had junked it up with too much subtext, it would have just been not a very enjoyable movie, and I think it would have slowed down the pace. You know, not every movie, not every story needs 55,000 symbols and subtextual references and all this. You know, sometimes you just need a few. And I think that is one of the things this movie excels at is, like I said, and I – listen, I'm probably missing stuff too. There's probably other stuff there I didn't pick up on that other people would. But it's not overkill. You know, it's just enough that there's something there to kind of give the story legs so that it's not just like you're, oh, it's like a slasher film and we're all, you know what I mean? There's something there to give it a little bit to chew on, but not too much to make it a turnoff or art house or, you know what I mean? It's like it's a really solid blend, I think.
This is the type of film if they had major stars and took place in the States, meaning Hollywood made it, this could have been released as a regular film, because like you said, it's straightforward. It's got a lot to excitement and to say in a sense without having art house subtext.
And I will say another thing that was interesting, we had talked earlier about them really paring down the gore in this movie, which for me is important because I'd rather leave it to the imagination. It's just more fun. When they're burying the bodies, the squelching that you're hearing is the mud, right? But you're sitting there thinking, oh God, oh, like your imagination is, and it's dark. So it's not like you see anything really, but that squelching is so well done with that sound design that you're sitting there, even though you can't see it, and you're envisioning guts. And then later, he gets served that meal of bloody venison, right?
That
when they
was
go out
so
to eat.
Gross. Yeah.
That was so gross. But here's what's cool about it.
That was blueberry sauce on it, so it made it look gross, but it wasn't really as gross as you think it was.
Right.
It looked awfully gross.
It really looks gross. But here's my point. Here's my point about that. My point is that because Vaughn choked that down and then went and threw it up, you sort of get the idea of what Vaughn must have seen when he was digging through the brain to get the bullet.
Actually,
so they never show you that, but you get the implied idea. Well, and I thought that was really great.
Well, Marcus,
that and the squelching.
Well, Marcus actually was the one that dug through the brain, and that and actually that scene happens after the dinner.
After the dinner scene, yeah, it's true. Chrissy.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm off. You guys are right. Well, yeah. It's still an interesting echo, even if it happens.
Well, I mean,
it could be foreshadowing.
Well, what
could be foreshadowing then?
Just for killing two people, whether it was not intentional, is enough to make someone probably sick to their stomach anyway.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
You know, and not having reported after,
it. He does throw up after Marcus kills the dad, right?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm getting my timeline confused here.
What one thing that
which
bothered
is more evidence at the scene of the crime, by the way.
That's true, Mike. One thing that bothered me about the film was the burying, because they show that it's winter and it's cold, and they show even snow just a couple of miles north of where they're at. There was no way you can dig in frozen soil. You just can't do it without a tractor.
Well, I think though
that's a little nitpicky, but you're not wrong.
Well, after the flooding I had last year, Eric, when I was trying to dig to prevent the flooding.
Well, I don't know what, like, is it nice soft Scottish loam? I don't know what the soil in that part of Scotland is like, and you're in the Highlands, and a few hundred feet in elevation difference can mean snow or not snow, so that can be a huge temperature.
The soil of a man's heart is stonier, Mike.
That is true. But no, it isn't stony. The flesh of a small child's face. That's
they did show them driving through, the rural area, and it was all like mountainy, rocky, and snowy. So Abe does have a fair point, even if he was just being facetious.
Well, I had a point too. I think. How emotions can be suppressed or run wild is a very evident theme that runs here. You know, we see the logical side from Logan. We see the more wild and emotional and violent side from Brian. We see the duality of the two friends as well. We see kind of like how the emotions become a storm of chaos.
Right, like me and Mike tonight.
Like King Ghidorah.
Well, and
three-headed, excellent job, Mike. Good.
And I was going to say something. No, I was going to say something, and then I completely forgot what I was going to say. Oh, I was talking about the soft loam or whatever. Yes, it is nitpicky. However, what I kind of felt about that was because it's going back to Ravensfell, right? And because
that's the town that was dead, right? That was all but dead. That was even worse than the town.
No, that's where they were hunting. The first place, and I thought it was interesting that they called hunting stalking too. That was
right.
Kind of,
yeah, Drumrain is the dying village. It was Drumrain.
Yeah, you're right.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So what ended up happening was they hunt in Ravensfell. This accident happens in Ravensfell. They bury the bodies in Ravensfell. I am not suggesting at all that there was any supernatural influence in this film at all, because I do not believe there was. There was not. However, there is a moment where they pull the car. It's after they've done the shooting, and they, at this place, they decide they're going to come back and bury the bodies tonight. They pull their car in front of this tree that's like all like kind of creepy and gnarled looking with the fog. That's the other thing. They were in an area of fog, so that suggests that it was a little warmer. And you also hear
the moors at night.
Right, and you also hear the ravens. So I didn't have a problem with the ground being a little soft, because I was almost like, it's not that they're suggesting that this is supernatural. They're just suggesting that this might be a really odd kind of a place. You know, it's a little off. There's a town in the middle of it that's dying. It's they're in the winter, and yet the entire, like, all the woods are shrouded in, like, very thick, pretty much tree tall, you know, fog. Not just a ground fog. It's pretty full all the way to the sky or whatever, whatever you say. The trees all look kind of gnarly and weird. So when they were digging, even though I knew the ground was frozen, I was kind of like, eh, that makes sense. They're sort of pointing out that this is just one of those odd places in the world. And that, for that, I could suspend my disbelief. Now, that might also be because I just finished writing a short story where I had this problem. And the way that I pretty much solved it was, well, he's going to dig up a body at this place called the Grove, which is kind of weird. You know, like, there's bodies hanging from trees and nobody goes there. And, like, you know, the storms seem to pass it by. So maybe the ground would be softer there, you know. So that's why I kind of let that go. And that didn't bother me. Cause I was just kind of suspending my disbelief a little bit.
You know, and that's fair. That's fair. And again, it's really more of a nitpick anyway. I mean, only someone that just had to try to dig through solid soil would notice it, to be honest, such as myself, when I had to do it last year.
But again, this is why I don't know. You have a point, but you're dealing with New England soil. Yeah, and I don't know what the soil is like in Scotland. Some places have very deep, soft soils, right? If it's not particularly stony soil, then that may be easier to do.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah,
we have reached the level of nitpicking.
Yeah, it's
that we're done talking about this movie.
Yeah, I think we're going
to. No, that's fair. That's fair. Let's see. Anything that people had on their lists? Bullet points, whatnot, that we missed so far that they wanted to bring up. All right, I guess not. All right, so before we give our final thoughts on this film here and whatnot, Eric, you do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Skansity Podcast. That's spelled Skancity. You can find it wherever you found this one.
Excellent. And Mike, me, you, and Eric are doing another podcast once a month?
Yeah, that's the Cinema a la Carte podcast, where we review a non-Dark Discussions topic, or what will, from this point forward, not be a Dark Discussions topic, films. And the two films we have done so far are Hostiles and Baby Driver. And then we have another film coming up whose name I can't remember.
Starlet.
It's like, yeah. Starlet Johansson?
That's Scarlet. Starlet.
That's right. Starlet. Right. And I set up the everything, so I just got to press the button to at least start it, and then it'll start popping up on its own feed, but most certainly on the Dark Discussions. So that'll be good. Let's see what else. Anybody have? Oh, Chrissy, you actually have two items of note. One is that you have a book that you published in April, and then something's happening in January.
Yeah. My book, The Shadows Behind, is a collection of short stories, and that is available anywhere you buy books, including Amazon. They are, you know, dark short stories. Some of them are probably scary. Some of them are more just plain old dark drama. So you
perfect
can check
for
that
dark
out.
Discussions, listeners.
Perfect, right? For dark discussions, correct. And I this week I launched my something I've been. It's been a passion of mine. I've wanted to do it for many years, and I cleaned some things off my plate and decided that this it was time finally to do it. I have launched my own literary magazine. It is called 34 Orchard. For those of you who are writers, I am a paying market. You can check us out at 34orchard.com. Our first issue releases in April. We do not open for submissions if you're a writer, short stories or poetry. We do not open for submissions until January 1st of 2020. So you can go to the website and check it out. The magazine will be free, but I, you know, as downloadable as a PDF right on our site. However, you will have, you know, there is an option there to donate a dollar or two if you would like. That's the model I decided to go with. I want people, I want everyone to have the chance to read this, and I don't particularly care if people donate or not. I just want it out there. But that option is there in case you would like to. Some people I know do prefer, like I do, I always make a donation if they want me to. So that's why I went ahead with that model. But I really am not thrilled about charging for it. So I just kind of want to make sure it gets out there. So now, you can check Kristen, it out, 34orchard.com.
Is it going to be a hard copy as well, or is it just a PDF where people can download and print it out?
No, it's just a PDF that people can download and print out.
Charging. That makes sense if you're not charging.
Yeah. Print gets to be very pricey.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, it really does. And because I made the decision to pay my writers, and it's, you know, some magazines pay nothing, some pay a dollar, some pay a couple bucks, whatever. I decided to go with a $50 flat fee, regardless of whether it's poetry or short story. And I have a very specific outlined budget for that per year that I can afford to do. If I start getting into print, there is going to be additional expenditures that would not allow me to pay my writers. And I think it is, or I would be forced to charge. And for me, I just would much rather pay for the work, pay a respectable, you know, something for the work. I originally wanted to be pro-rate, but that's beyond me right now. Pro-rate is maybe down the road, but, you know, I want to pay my writers. And so therefore I have to keep my overhead exceptionally low. I have a budget for this whole thing, including the ad-free website. You know, it includes like any collateral stuff I might need, which is very little. You know, some advertising, maybe inexpensive Facebook or Google ads. And I have a very strict budget. So for me to go print would really not be possible. Not for me to be able to afford to do what I want to do. So.
Very good. Let's see. Anybody have news or anything they wanted to bring up?
Not news, but I did watch a movie on Shudder last night called Beelzebuth. And I enjoyed it. So if you have Shudder, check it out.
That's like the devil name, Beelzebub, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, but it has a TH on the end.
Gotcha. Is it a foreign language film or English language film? Or?
It's both. It's mixed English and Spanish. It's set in Mexico.
Okay. And you liked it.
I did.
Okay, that's good. So subscribers to Shudder, they can check it out. That's cool. Any other news anybody wanted to bring up or things they've seen that they wanted to let folks know about or to avoid or whatever? Anyone? All right, very well. All right, so I guess we can give our final thoughts on this film here. So let's start with you, Mike.
I don't know how much it's going to stick with me down the road. I'll be curious to see that. It's like I said, it's a very straightforward film, but I think that pays off in terms of the emotion, in terms of the tension. I'm glad that they didn't do a weird twist in the middle like Phil was fearing, and I was fearing kind of something similar, like weird, for half a second, because I think that just would complicate it and turn it into something completely different and maybe not as good. But yeah, it's a strong recommend, and I'm very glad that Gage Foltz chose this as his Patreon pick.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, Chrissy.
I think this is a very solid movie. I really think it's a good recommendation if you're looking for something on Netflix to watch and you're a little bit dicey on, oh, is this good or am I going to waste my time? Because let's all face it, some things on Netflix turn out to be not so great. I think this is definitely what I would call a solid bet. It is a dark drama. It's not overly complicated. It's well-paced, and it's an interesting little story. So I'm just going to give this a recommendation for sure.
All right, very good. Abe?
I thought this was a really good film overall. I said the actors really sold the performances. It was well shot. It's a familiar kind of story, but it's still one that is told well. If you have a Netflix account, it's worth checking out. It's 145 minutes or so long, but it's, even though it's kind of a slow-paced film, it's still a pretty good watch. I think it can be mostly taxing at certain points. And that's mostly from the drama itself rather than the violence that takes place, which I think is really shows how well it handles the drama and the thorough elements of this tale in itself. So check out Calibre. If you have the chance.
All right, very good. For me, it's a really solid thriller. If you like general thrillers, meaning non, police or procedurals or anything like that, or lawyer type ones, this one is different from all those and is pretty damn good. It's well made. Well directed, and especially the acting was phenomenal. The two leads in this were just absolutely great, and I wouldn't mind seeing both of them again in other films. I would recommend it, especially since it's free on VOD as long as you're a subscriber of Netflix. Eric?
This is a decent Netflix watch. Check it out.
All right, that's very good. So once again, this is a Patreon pick discovered by us because of the Patreon pick. So another good thing about donating to the podcast is also allowing us to discuss films that we wouldn't necessarily discuss. And Gage Fultz picked a fairly good one for sure. And hopefully we did it justice. Once again, 2018, Mike Palmer as director, screenwriter, and it's available everywhere where VOD and Netflix is available. So I'm not sure how you could see it in other countries, but at least in the U.S., Netflix for sure. So, Eric, why don't you lead us out then?
All right. Thanks for tuning in tonight to listen to us talk about Calibre. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.